Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Let's Chat. My name is Tony. We're just trying to get up and running this Friday evening. Let me just check in with my girl, Miss Leisha, see if she is online. You know, Blog Talk be trying to put some moves on it sometimes, so we just got to do mic check. Hey, Leash.
1, 2, 1, 2. Hey, C. What's up, y'all? Your girls are back. We are back on the radio. We've been doing Let's Chat Live, y'all. Listen, that live, our whole live atmosphere is so dope. We thank you guys for really, really, really embracing our mm-hmm. our idea of change. We still do both, but we want to be able to do lives too. And everybody has really, really been supporting us and requesting to be on Let's Chat Live, which is awesome. If you have mm-hmm. missed any of our Let's Chat Lives, no worries. Head over to our YouTube at Let's Chat Radio and check it out over there. You'll be able to check out all of our lives. Eventually, all of our radio interviews will be on our YouTube as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just really excited for our change and the maneuvering that we did during the COVID-19. You know, it really kind of changed everything. But the live mm-hmm. aspect of the show has been great. If you want to be a guest, either for radio or live interview, send your request to the chat radio show at gmail.com. The cost for live is $20. And there's no cost, as you guys know, there's no cost for radio. We always keep this platform free for any and everybody that wants to be able to voice how they're feeling, mm-hmm. talk about their brand, their books, whatever it is. And we have had so many guests on
mm-hmm.
in the last 6 years since we've been doing it. And I think that's just amazing. What about you, T?
I think it's absolutely awesome. And Leash, if I might add that when they go over to our YouTube channel, press that red subscribe button and also check that bell so you guys can be notified every time Let's Chat has a new video up and running so that you can be up to par on what we're doing over here on Let's Chat. So don't forget, subscribe and press that all bell so you can be notified when your ladies of Let's Chat have some new material up for you guys to view.
Absolutely, y'all. Listen, your girl tired today. I had a long day yesterday. My son, you know, I want to vent for a minute with this virtual graduation.
What
stuff.
My boy do?
He can't do nothing, but I just feel, you know, some schools did the kids right, and some schools did not. I just feel these virtual graduations, come on now. Y'all got a whole football field and a parking lot. You can have kids come by name, sit in the stands, maybe have one parent with them or not. You could do it in the parking lot, drive by, something. But some of these school districts, I think, use this as an opportunity to save money. And it's really unfortunate because a lot of the kids did not experience, really, really experience graduation. And I just really think it could have been done social distancing, with masks, you presenting them with their diploma. It don't have to be a whole bunch of people there. You could have all the A's in the bleachers or lined up, you know, or something. I'm just saying, that's just my vent.
Especially, you know, Leaf, they worked hard to get to this point in their lives, and they can't get this back, you know. They can't get it back. It's a plight that was forced upon them.
Yeah.
Not anything due to themselves. You know, you try to make the best and the most of it to make it as memorable as possible.
Absolutely. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying. Y'all know how we do. We get on here, we get to chopping it up and talking like we don't talk every day. Go ahead, T, open the phone up, and then we're going to play a little song. Shout out to E.P. Pope, producer, maker producer, but his jazz album is coming out. He has his Pandora station, Irving Pope. Make sure y'all go over and check that out. We're going to play some of his new music before we get our fabulous guests up in here. And we're going to talk about a corrupted mind. Go ahead, T.
Y'all know Leash and her titles for our shows. I'm just saying. Once again, thank you, everybody, for joining us this Friday evening. Get ready for a fantastic show. But for all those that are just tuning in for the very first time, welcome. And for all those that are returning, we so appreciate you guys. But here on this chat, you know, Leisha and I started this show about 6 years ago, and we used to celebrate just literature because we are avid readers, first and foremost. But our show has evolved, and our enjoyment of everything has evolved to include all the arts. Every art that can be possibly had has been through the doors of Let's Chat. We've had authors, of course. We've had musicians, songwriters, actors, first-rate actors. We've had lawyers, athletes. They have all come onto the show and shared their precious time with us, so we thank them. Just check out our archives. You will not be disappointed. But I show out all our listeners as well as our guests to interact in an intimate, fun, and friendly environment. We get to hear the passion behind what it is that they're sharing with us. And as always, tonight is going to be, once again, another passionate show up in the room of Let's Chat with our new guest, Mr. Jared Dixon. So get ready, sit back, get your red cup, because Leisha and I, we don't discriminate. I got my gold cup tonight, Leisha. But get ready to have a fantastic show with the ladies. Let's Chat, and our special guest tonight, author Jared Dixon.
Absolutely, y'all. We're going to take a brief break before we bring him up in the chat room to talk that talk. We're going to play y'all some of this Irving Pope off of his new jazz album that is getting ready to come out. COVID kind of slowed everything down, but listen, let me tell you about a man in the music industry. When I say he works 24 hours a day, he is in that studio. He is in about that studio life for real. For those who don't know who Irving Pope is, he actually is the Furnace Band, and he plays on tour with The Game. He's a producer. He's worked with Kanye West, so he's fabulous. So we're going to play some of his new music that's coming out on his new album, and we will be back.
Out of hiding, cause I've been trying to find you. Been looking high and low, wanting you more and more. To come and dirty wine it,
Yeah.
I love the way you move it.
I love the way you move.
Like how you doing what you're doing. You got me hypnotized, got me all in my mind. I'm trying not to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
Your body, body, body. Drop it down low, then you pick it up. I want it, want it, want it. I want you so bad, I can't get enough. Your body, body, body. Ooh, got me in my feelings. Girl, you're a star. That's what you are. You know you're doing something to me. Got my emotions on a roller coaster ride. Yeah, this thing's going on between us. Something I can't fight.
Not tonight.
Not tonight.
Ooh, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love out here on the dance floor. I'm in love out here on the dance floor.
I've come out of hiding, cause I've been trying to find you.
Cause I've been trying to find you.
Been looking high and low, wanting you more and more. To come in dirty wine,
to come in dirty wine.
Yeah. I love the way you move.
I love the way you move.
Like how you doing what you do.
Like how you doing what you do.
You got me hypnotized, got me all in my mind. I'm trying not to lose it. Your body, body, body. Tell me about the big, I don't even care.
No.
I want it, want it, want it. I want you to myself, I don't want to share.
I don't want to share.
Your body, body, body. Ooh, got me in my feelings. Girl, you're a star.
Ooh, that's what you are.
You know you're doing something to me. Got my emotions on a roller coaster ride. Yeah. This thing's going on between us. Something I can't fight. Not tonight.
Not tonight.
I'm in love, I'm in love.
Cause I've been trying to find you.
Been looking high and low, wanting you all along. To come in dirty wine.
Come in dirty wine.
I love the way you move.
I love the way you move.
Like how you doing what you're doing.
I like what you're doing with
you. You got me hypnotized. Got me all in my mind. I'm trying not to lose it.
I'm trying not to lose it.
Don't you come out of high. Cause I've been trying to find you. Been looking high and low, wanting you all along. To come in dirty wine. I love the way you move. Like how you're doing what you're doing.
Like how you're doing what you're doing.
You got me with the time. Got me all in my mind. I'm trying not to lose it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh.
You are now tuned in to the mother greatest.
Yes, you are back in the chat room with the ladies of Let's Chat. We want to welcome you guys. Welcome, welcome, welcome all those that's just tuning in. Welcome to the show. We have our first fabulous guest up in the chat room. Honey, we're talking about them corrupted minds tonight. And, you know, during the COVID 19 and the shutdown, we've learned a lot about our minds. And I think a lot of people have reassessed their intent behind some of the things that they do. And it doesn't have to be just non-African-American people, but everybody. Everybody has looked at how they treat people, and they've also started looking at how they treat and speak to themselves. I think that for the most part, we try to be mindful about how we treat and speak to others, and less mindful about how we treat and speak to ourselves. And I think that in order to get someone else to be able to respect you, to be able to embrace you, you have to respect and embrace yourself first, because you teach people how to treat you. And so with all of the riots and just the, and I don't see all the riots as a bad thing, because some good things have really come out of it. There has been legislation out of it, and that just means that change has appeared from a rough patch. You know, there's always change that comes when things start going a little haywire and out of control. So I'm excited to hear his thought on it as well. We have the fabulous Derek Dixon in the chat room. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yes, hello. How are you today?
We are good. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
You are so very welcome. Okay, so we like to, before we get into it, because, you know, you do a little bit of everything, so we're going to talk that talk for a minute about some of the things. But I want you to tell everybody about your literary journey and a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so my literary journey started in 2008. I was an intern over the summer, and I was bored one day, and I started writing a book. And for 3 years after that, I just sort of worked the idea and kept writing. And then I stopped in 2011, and I'll get into why I stopped in 2011. But then 2 years later, I picked up the work, and I reworked it. I found a missing piece that I was looking for the past 5 years that I finally found, and I was able to put that in my writing, and it's in the book that is before you guys right now, Corrupted, The Truth Shall Be the Nail in Your Coffin. It's been a bumpy journey, to say the least, a bumpy journey, but I'm here.
Wow. And, you know, we always like to ask people about their goal moment. And, you know, your goal moment is when thought and execution come together. What was your goal moment? What was going on in your mind when you decided to say, let me publish this?
So my goal moment was in December of 2018. I had watched a documentary called The Sunday Sessions, and it featured my conversion therapist in the documentary. And prior to watching it, I was just on the fence about whether I wanted to publish this, or if I wanted to go the traditional route, or shop it, or just put it on Patreon and have people support that way. But once I saw it, I knew that I had to have a tangible book in front of me, something that I could hold, something where people could turn the pages, because it was just so important for me to have a physical representation of the experiences of so many people like me. That was so important.
Absolutely. As you wrote this book, I know it took you some time over a period of time, but was it therapeutic for you, and did it help you through your writing get over some of those things that may have been built up? Because, you know, we have baggage. We got baggage that we get from our parents. Then we pick up our own baggage. But when things start happening, we start becoming attached to our pain, and it's hard to let go. So how was that writing process? Was it therapeutic for you to help you to be able to let go so you can pull other people through?
Yes. It's funny because this is the first book out of a series of 6 books that I'm working on. So the first book is really about finding the courage and the fortitude to save yourself and get out of a situation that is literally meant to tear you down and break you down and erase you from the world. That is really the overriding theme of the first book, is how do we get out? How do we exercise self-preservation in a situation where your decision-making skills and your thought processes are all controlled and regulated by someone who claims to be an authority on a particular subject. So to give you kind of some context of what I had gone through, I went through essentially what I now attribute to as psychological torture. I went through what's called conversion therapy. Conversion therapy is a process by which a mental health practitioner, sometimes even a licensed mental health practitioner, a pastor, a spiritual leader, or any person in authority tries to convert someone who is LGBTQ to heterosexual. So they have the belief that being LGBTQ or gender nonconforming is wrong, it's immoral, it's sinful, and you have to be straight in order to be accepted by God, by society, by your family.
That's deep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I got a question. Mm-hmm. Now, you say gender not conforming, right?
Gender not conforming.
I want you to
mm-hmm.
talk a little bit about that, because just for me, who somebody sleeps with is their personal business, really. That's how it should be. That's what they do behind closed doors. But when you meet them, if it's a black man, you're meeting that black man. You're meeting that black woman. You're meeting a man or a woman. And the respect should start there. You know what I'm saying? Who they sleep with shouldn't even be a factor in anything. Because you're a, and I say black man because that's, to me, that's power. This is a black man. You respect him regardless. I don't care who he sleep with. I don't care how many people he sleep with. He deserves that type of respect, because in our community, our black men, well, they should be our leaders. You know what I'm saying? They should be our strength.
Absolutely.
And a lot of them are broken, whether they are straight or not. So talk a little bit about the non-gender conforming and why you guys choose to use that verbiage.
So gender non-conforming means that you don't conform or fit what quote-unquote stereotypical gender roles. You don't fit into a box of male or female. Maybe your interests don't align with what it stereotypically means to be a male. Maybe your interests don't align with what it stereotypically means to be a female. So, gender non-conforming, individuals who are gender non-conforming are targeted for discrimination and harassment because they're just seen as other. They don't ascribe to what society says a man should be, what a man should do, what a woman should be, what a woman should do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they are not straight. You know, sometimes they are straight. It doesn't necessarily mean that a man who is gender nonconforming is gay, and it doesn't mean that a woman who is gender nonconforming is a lesbian.
Uh-huh.
It just means that they don't fit what is stereotypically defined as a male or a female. It could be something. It could be little things like how they dress, what they like to do, what their passions are, because they don't align with what society has said a man should be, what a woman should be, they are targeted for harassment and discrimination. And oftentimes that discrimination starts in the home and it starts in the community.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Now, Jerry, this is Tony. You know, this is very interesting, and it's actually pretty deep what you've shared with us in just a few minutes that you've been on. But I want to go back, and I think you said at the start of your journey, you felt that you had to put forth what you're doing because of the ability of for people like you. Is it because mm-hmm. you didn't see or feel accepted, or you didn't see yourself in other places? Because, you know, for those that are listening, it could be a little bit confusing, you know, especially mm-hmm. with the gender not conforming. So can you please share what it is or what it was that you were looking for that you didn't see, which got you on this journey?
When I started writing and really taking the therapy seriously, like going back to therapy after being absent for a year and a half, when I finally went back to therapy and I started to really take my writing seriously and not just as like a hobby, what I came to realize was that I wasn't seeing myself in the mainstream media. My experience was not reflected on my television. It wasn't reflected in the books I was reading from the library. I had to seek out for a long time reading materials, documentaries, films that spoke to my existence as a gay black man
mm-hmm.
who survived conversion therapy, because that mm-hmm. piece was missing from the narrative. We look at films like Boy Erased. We look at films like The Miseducation of Cameron Post. And those films tackled the topic of conversion therapy. But what was missing from that piece, from that narrative, was the black experience.
Mm.
The black experience was absent.
Absolutely. And I want to take just go back a little bit more, only because being a black woman, and I take pride in that, I believe that a black woman represents strength. We are the backbone. We are supposed to be the backbone of our homes. And as a mother, and I'm not just talking about conversion therapy, because they have these ranches or whatever where you send your kid, where, you know, people send their kids if they can't control them. I'm against it all, because I feel like this. As a mother, you are your child's protector as well. You can't mm-hmm. put them in that type of situation, and you're placing your child in the hands of somebody else because you don't understand something they're going through. As a parent, you know, and we don't do therapy in our community a lot, and we should.
We don't.
Because it's very important to know how to communicate with our children. Even whether,
absolutely.
I don't care whether they're straight or gay, whatever they want to be. Because in order to protect them, you got to be able to communicate with them. And for
mm-hmm.
me to place my child in that type of environment, because
mm-hmm.
I'm not understanding something about him, or place my daughter in a type of environment because I can't control her, I have a problem with that. Because I
mm-hmm.
feel like this, how I treat mine is how you're going to treat them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they at your house, and you don't treat them right, then me and you have to have a come to Jesus moment. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a problem.
Absolutely.
I got to understand them, but you going to understand and respect them. I don't care what it is, because they represent me. And so if they're
right.
in your presence, if they're in your care, you're going to treat them accordingly, or it's going to be some problems.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
It's hard for me to wrap my mind around the conversion therapy. I want to talk about the connection between you and your parents. How have you been able to heal that, if you have?
It's a work in progress. I'm going to be freaking honest. It's a work in progress. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, we good. We made up. I
mm-hmm.
am going to tell y'all, like, real talk. I can hold a grudge. I can be petty as hell. excuse my language, I can be petty as hell. And if you did stuff to me, you're going to get it back to you. So we've had that relationship where I've just been awful to them. I've been mean to them. I mean, they put me in a situation with a crazy man who told me that gay men were all narcissists and they were self-absorbed and they were incapable of having relationships. They were all promiscuous. Wow. And they just thought about what they wanted for themselves. They didn't think about anything else. That's why they were incapable of being parents. And
I'm just gonna say this right here. You ain't gotta be gay to be a narcissistic man. That is something that is across the board. It could be anybody. And that's somebody that is a broken person that, you know, because hurt people hurt people. They don't know how to love themselves and accept themselves first off. And I think a lot of times, and don't send me no inboxes, y'all, for what I'm about to say. In the gay and lesbian community, I think, just from an outsider looking in, sometimes that person, and we've had a lot of guests that have talked about, they couldn't accept themselves when at the same time. So if you're not accepting yourself, if you're not secure inside of yourself, you're teaching other people kind of how to handle you who don't know how to handle you. But, you know, again, as parents, you have to be able to teach self-love. And, again, who somebody sleeps with shouldn't even be part of the scenario. Like, you shouldn't have to say a gay black man because you're a black man. Being gay is just your choice of who you decide to sleep with and spend your life with. That has nothing to do with you being a black man up front, first and foremost. You know what I'm saying? And that society places people in boxes, and it places everyone in boxes. You know what I'm saying? But as a woman, the only person on earth that's able to give life physically, you know, as a mother, I just feel, you know what I'm saying? I just feel, you know, I couldn't do that to my son because he's mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got a daddy, but that's mine. And so I get, you know, very cougar momish, you know, over that. Go ahead, T, I'm sorry.
And she sure does that. She surely does.
I don't play no games.
But Jared, once again, this is Tony. I'm so interested to know what era you grew up in because this just sounds so, I don't even know the word. I mean, it can't be today. I mean, if you don't mind sharing the era you grew up in, like the 80s, the 60s, the 70s, the 90s, what era was actually putting their children through conversion therapy with such a barbaric outcome?
This was 2011. So
in the 2000s.
2000, yes. And this is still happening.
Wow.
People don't understand that just because we have marriage equality in all 50 states doesn't mean this issue has gone away. The conversion therapists and those who advocate for it are number one in the highest positions of government. Just look at who our vice president is. And
we don't consider him a man, I'm sorry. No offense. No offense to anybody that supports him. I just don't consider him a man. He doesn't have that man for me, how I see a man, because I don't put him in a box. I'm sorry. I'm wrong. You know, I'm just saying. Go ahead. Continue.
We have an administration that just doesn't care about anybody that society has relegated into a second class, exactly, President Trump, that occupant in the White House. I don't even want to use the word president. That seems disrespectful to the office of the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing in many ways these religious liberties bills being enacted in different states. You saw one in Indiana. You saw these conversion therapy bans being passed in different states like Maryland, and you saw the conversion therapists filing lawsuits like the drop of a hat. They were there with their lawyers ready to go, ready to do battle. So this issue is still pervasive and it's still happening in our society.
Mm-hmm.
They've crafted a new narrative. They've rebranded themselves to make what they do palatable and tolerable.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going away. And to your point, like I was brought up in the 90s. I'm 31 years old. I was raised, you know, in Prince George's County, Maryland. I went to an HBCU, Norfolk State University, and I got my master's from UMBC in 2014 in engineering. So I am a well-educated black man, and I went into conversion therapy thinking that the people who spoke against it, that were against it, that warned against it, were all brainwashed by LGBTQ activists who were pushing their agenda. That's the narrative that was kind of pushed on me, and therefore I was discouraged from researching what really conversion therapy did to people. And anything that was presented that contradicted the narrative the conversion therapist wanted me to adopt or believe, they were just saying, oh, you can't believe them. They have their own agenda. They're from the militant LGBTQ faction who are just trying to push their agenda on everybody and really erase the people who want to change their sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I just want to say one thing right there, because everybody has an agenda. All
exactly.
lobbyists have
mm-hmm.
an agenda. Everybody. The agenda is the intent behind what you're doing. And so if you say it's for this purpose, but you have a separate intent, you know, it kind of disdains the purpose behind whatever it is that you are supposed to be supporting. But again, you know, it's just crazy that I think that you, and don't get me wrong, there are some people that just experiment, meaning that they don't know, and they want to know what it is, but they're looking for something. The intent behind being experimentative in sexuality is you're looking for yourself in that process. And
that's a valid point. Mm-hmm.
Some people are, you know, and maybe they need to see a therapist to help them to understand themselves so that they know who they are. And some may have thought they were gay or bisexual or whatever the case may be, maybe in high school. And then as they got older, they were like, oh, no, that wasn't it at all. But that's not everybody. And that's a person-to-person-to-person case basis. You can't be going around trying to convert nobody. You help them to understand who they are, because if they don't understand themselves, they're going to have a hard time being in any type of relationship with anybody, having children with anybody, having the idea of children, anything. They're going to have a hard time just being with other people because they don't know how to be with themselves. I'm just saying. I just feel disturbed. Go ahead.
So what you said about sexuality being fluid is a valid point. For some people, it is fluid. There's a spectrum. And their experiences should be respected. But for conversion therapy, the premise is that you are broken. Your sexuality is a brokenness within you. It's rooted in childhood trauma. It's rooted in having an absent parent, usually the same-sex parent. And because you have that missing from your life, you sought that validation and affirmation in sexual and romantic relationships with people of the same sex. So the narrative that was pushed on all of us in that program was to understand that our sexuality, our same-sex attractions, rather, were the result of emotional deficiencies we experienced from childhood and adolescence.
That's interesting, Jared. This is Tony. You know, you talk about the same-sex parent of a gay child. Do you think that hurts them or helps them in the long run? What is your opinion on that?
So, I know from my personal experience, when a child might be suspected maybe early on to be gay, and I think if I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be real. I think my parents knew from an early age that I was probably gay. And I think my father in particular, because he, for what it's worth, he has narcissistic tendencies. He does. I'm just going to say that. He does. And because he probably felt deep down that it was a failure on his part, that he could not get past, that he could not own or sit with, he subconsciously pulled away. He himself didn't really know how to parent to begin with. I'm going to be honest.
Right.
His model for what a father was and what a father did was flawed. My grandfather was raised in Georgia. He was born in 1914. And he came up to Washington, D.C. and had 8 kids and worked 2 jobs and was never around and wasn't attentive and was only concerned with providing the basic needs for his kids, food and shelter. That was it. There was no deep personal connection with his kids. That didn't happen. My father will say otherwise, but I know what happened, and I know the truth, and he wasn't like that. And
you got to think about the times, too. At that, back in 1940, 1914, 1918, the times were different, you know, and the relationships that parents and children had, and husbands and wives had, was different. The purpose for marrying was different. And so we tend to instill what we have learned into our kids. And so with your father's fear and misunderstanding of really knowing how to understand himself as a man and his role, because, you know, back in the day, that was all it was, get married. You know, women, it was y'all just here to have babies. If you anything you watch that represents 18. Early 1900s, y'all here to have babies, y'all not here to have thoughts. You know what I'm
saying?
Absolutely. And just evolution that happens mentally. You know, we're talking about the corrupted minds today. Our mind and our thought process changing. Do you think that some of your father's reaction came from fear and, we know he was not understanding, one, himself and his role as your father and how to parent you, but not understanding looking for that why. You know, some people have to have that concrete thing, that one thing that they can understand. And sometimes it's not meant to be understood. It's meant to have love there. And so the lack of love maybe that he didn't have with his father, he had to bring that baggage into your relationship with him.
He brought it all in.
Oh, goodness.
But also with that leash, and Jerry, you know, I want to add also, it can be that, well, you're the first child because you said he didn't know how to parent. Now, were you
the first child? I'm the only child.
Oh, you're the only child. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
So many different levels.
That, yeah.
People think you're an only child. Yeah, I'm like, child, bye. That's not all it's cracked up to be. No. Mm. You're an only child.
Yeah, that explains it, too.
You're kind of the experiment. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're the experiment. We don't know what to do with our first kid. You know, when you have your first child, you're either overprotective, you're not protective enough, you don't know what to do. You don't even, mm-hmm. you ain't got no clues.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Wow. Well, that could answer that question, you know?
You understand being an only child, or at least I did, rather, that when you're an only child, your parents' hopes and dreams are all put on you. It's like you have to do everything right. Because there's no one else.
They want you to be better than
parents,
them. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one else that they can turn to. You don't have a sister or a brother that they can project a part of their hopes and dreams onto.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have that. I didn't have a sister where my parents would say, oh, well, he came out and that might mess up, you know, us having grandkids. Not really, by the way, but in the quote-unquote traditional sense, maybe his sister will do that or maybe his brother will do that. Well, I didn't have that. It was just me. Me and my gayness that they had to work with. So that came with its own set of challenges. And I'm still navigating that today. When I wrote this book, I did not care who I picked off. I did not care how explicit, how gritty, how dirty I discuss things, because when you try to wrap up truth with a nice little neat bow and make it pretty, it takes away from the authenticity of the experience. I wasn't about to do that. I was going to put all the nitty-gritty details of what I had gone through, what others have gone through, and I was just going to put it in a book, and you know what? If it pisses people off, if they're put off by it, then I don't care.
Right. And, you know, and you can tell that in writing, you know, depending on what it is, you titled it Corrupted. Let's talk a little bit about the title and the cover. Where did that come from for you?
So the subtitle, The Truth Shall Be the Nail in Your Coffin, I came up with that based off of this platitude I heard growing up, the truth shall set you free. And what I've been doing with my own research about what conversion therapy is, how it's harmed people, I decided to take that platitude and give it new meaning for my book, that first book, which is, I'm going to use the truth, I'm going to use my truth, I'm going to use the experiences of other people, and I'm going to bury you because you've been harming people and you've been selling people a bunch of lies. And the cover comes from this idea that there's someone higher up, whether it be an authority figure. In this case, it was the conversion therapist. And he was projecting what he believed was the way to live, the way to exist, the way to show up in the world, if you want to call it that. So his voice, his ideas, his opinions always came front and center.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anytime we questioned anything, he shut us down. He redirected the conversation.
Wow.
He led us to answers that we didn't provide. When he asked questions and we gave answers that weren't acceptable to him, he led us to the answers. He gave us the answers that he wanted us to provide.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely, because whenever you're trying to control an environment, that's what you do. You guide people through to your end moment, whatever your intent is. And I just really hope, I know you said that it's a work in progress with you and your parents, and I know that you are in therapy. I hope you guys are in family therapy to help guide you guys through the process of mending and coming back together. Because ultimately, I think that just from losing a parent, from loss, you know, at some point in that loss and you're grieving, some stuff is not going to matter because it's going to be that loss there for you. And I don't want them to experience loss from you and not be and have that regret from not having that connection, or you having loss of one of them and not having that connection and having that that grief there and that guilt. I don't, you know, that's because it's just a hard thing already. So I hope you guys mend that. You guys really need to, because life is too short. Anything can happen any day to anybody.
Yeah, I agree. You know, with my mom, like we still talk, we keep in touch, and she's made some effort. She has. We've always kept in touch through all of this. We've never lost touch. I did not talk to her for a whole month. I blocked her number. I was like, girl, I don't need to deal with you right now. I blocked the number for a whole month. With my dad, I haven't seen him in 2 years. And I blocked his number, and I was like, you know what? If you want to deal with me, if you want to see with me, if you want to have anything to do with me, you go to my therapist. I gave him the address to my therapist. I gave him the phone number of therapist, and I said, this is when I see my therapist, and you can come and you can show up. And that'll be the way that we interact. I'm not about to put on a show and pretend that you're the greatest dad in the world when on most days I think you're a piece of crap. I want to say the other word, but I'm not going to. So
I understand.
So
I understand.
So, yeah.
It's always hard. So
yeah,
and just switching lanes a little bit, because you play the piano, and I've watched your videos, and you play with such passion. Is playing the piano how you helped yourself to heal, as well as writing the book?
Yes, it did. It did help. I grew up in church, so I played in church. That was my whole life. I was leading worship and doing all that. And when you just realize that your church is part of the problem, you have to figure out what you believe on your own. You have to confront your beliefs and many of the ways in which they don't fit your life and they just don't make sense anymore. So I've discovered that music, whether it be religious or secular, has the power to heal and move people and bring people together.
That's also a part of finding yourself as well.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. You have had such a tumultuously stressful life growing up, but I do want to say, you know, out of all darkness, you have grown into, and you're growing into a very strong man. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you.
A man that's able to look at himself, his own faults, not just others' faults. You're able to say, listen, something is not right here. all the way around. We need to get this together and fixed, because it's happening in everywhere, and just the hurt. I mean, I could just hear it, you know. And so it's a whole process. And so you're a testimony for other people to help get them through, whether they've had the similar experience or even if they can relate to the lack of relationship with their parents. And I just really commend you on that. Outside of the book, you have other things going on. Tell us a little bit about those aspects of your brand.
So right now I'm partnered with a fantastic organization called CTSurvivors.org. We launched June 28th. And we are all about supporting conversion therapy survivors. We are about facilitating healing first and foremost. That's what we are here to do. Everything else is secondary to that. We must heal first, and we must heal as a community before we go out and try to help other people.
That's first and foremost.
And I am actually working on a piece right now. It's probably going to be either a column, because I write for Baltimore Out Loud. My column is called Truth in Action, Conversion Therapy Extreme Makeover. And I am going to present this idea for an article about the lack of visibility in conversion therapy of Black voices, of Black survivors. Why don't we see Black survivors talking about their experience with conversion therapy? And a good friend of mine, Matt Ashcroft, a fellow conversion therapy survivor, a Black man like myself, we were just talking recently about how in the Black community, conversion therapy is just called going to church. When a pastor lays hands on you, when they tell you to fast, when they pull out the Bible and they read the proper passages that condemn homosexuality, when they're casting out demons and performing spiritual warfare and singing hymns, that's a form of conversion therapy. They're trying to extract a part of you that has always been there. They're trying to take that out of you. That's conversion therapy. That's the goal of conversion therapy. They're trying to extract homosexuality out of you. That's a form of conversion therapy. But Black people, you know, we don't call it conversion therapy. We call it going to church. It's Bible study. It's revival. It's daily life. It's the men's day service and the women's day service and the prayer breakfast. It's all of that. So that also ties into the narrative that you talked about earlier about Black people not going to therapy, which, once again, when we talk about conversion therapy and how it's being presented right now, we're once again seeing a lack of Black survivors coming forward, because that's just not their experience a lot of times. Maybe for some it is, but for those of you that don't know, conversion therapy costs a lot of money. It's over $200 per session. It's expensive. And there are programs, there are workshops that cost money. And the economic disparities between Black people and white people still very, it's just devastating.
The economic disparities are devastating
between Black and white people. And that plays into Black LGBTQ people going through what is quote-unquote called conversion therapy, what the mainstream calls conversion therapy.
Wow. And I just want to say, it's not every church, you know, and like you said, some people don't have those experiences and some people do. You have some churches that really want to, because they want to be able to, or you have pastors, I'll say, or bishops that want to be able to grow and know that the church has to be there for everybody. And it can't take sides. and they are pushing to make sure churches are able to grow and expand and help everybody, no matter if it's sexuality, incarceration, because you have to be able to have that support system in place when they don't have it, you know. And if people don't have a support system, they can't grow. It stifles them. So we so appreciate you coming into the chat room and talking that talk with us, because this is a topic that is truly, truly, truly important. Because listen, I'm a mom. I couldn't. First of all, I'm the converter. You know what I'm saying? If he needs to be converted, that's my job. But not converted as far as not being himself. You know what I'm saying? I'm here to guide those things, like making sure you know how to clean up and take care of yourself and be who you are and walk in that. You know, we all have feminine and masculine energy. And I think that the lack of men really being in their strength as leaders in our community, for me, I think that they've created a lot of women that have to walk in our masculine energy on a regular basis. And we don't get to tap into our feminine energy as much because we are the providers. We are, you know, we're the providers and the planners, and we're doing all of the things because we have. We have men that don't know how to be men. They don't, and I don't mean like that, but I mean they don't know their position. They don't know their purpose. They haven't stepped into their purpose to know. It don't matter who you sleep with, you still are a leader, and you have a responsibility to the whole community to help everybody be able to move and strive. So we really commend you, and we hope everything falls into place. We know that it will. Your brand and your vision and your mind is going to expand into so many things that it's going to start with one thing, and then by the time you finish 5 years from now, it's going to be something totally different. We're excited for you. We're excited for you, your movement, your thought process, your book. Oh, my goodness. And we so appreciate you coming to kick it with us here in the chat room. We want to shout out your social media.
Yes.
You are so very welcome. Shout out all your social media. Yes.
My Instagram is at DIJarrett13. Follow me. My Twitter is at PianoGuy_11. And you can find me on Facebook. And just check out my social media pages. I am talking about things that are important to me. You'll see me talking with other survivors and just really amplifying them and uplifting them, because that's what it's all about. We're here to uplift each other, and we are stronger together. And we're all fighting the same enemy. We're all in this together. We're not here to steal anything from anybody. We're just here to uplift, and that's all you're going to get from my pages. I'm here to uplift people. I'm here to amplify fellow survivors' voices. It doesn't matter what you've been through. It doesn't matter what you believe in. I'm just here to make sure that you know that you matter. That's it. At the end of the day, that's it. I'm here to amplify you and make sure that you know that you matter and that you're valued.
Well, we appreciate that, Jared. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining Leisha and I tonight on Let's Chat. And please know that this is your home. You're welcome back anytime, even if you just want to share a thought, a process, anything you want to share, want to chat, just hit one of us up. We'll make it happen, okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You enjoy the rest of your weekend, hon.
You too.
Okay, then.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Thank you once again for joining us here on Let's Chat This. That was our awesome guest, the one and only Mr. Jared Dixon. We hope you guys enjoyed that interview. And if you missed part of it, no worries. Just head on over to our archives on Let's Chat on Blog Talk. You can also catch us on any podcast, because the ladies of Let's Chat, we go where you go. From Leisha and I, enjoy your weekend, and we will see you guys next week.
We got a live on Thursday evening, July 2nd. So make sure you follow us. Have a great weekend. Bye.
Thank you.